to 2 Timothy chapter 2. You probably haven't heard these names. You might have that because of recent movies, or maybe you're a fan of older movies like Gary Cooper and that type of thing. But these two names probably aren't very, very familiar. But these two individuals, despite the fact that they are not quite in the same era, have a tremendous amount in common. These two men are Desmond Doss and Alvin York. These two men have a lot in common. They were both soldiers. They both fought in world wars. They were both recipients of the Medal of Honor. Not only that they were two of the most decorated soldiers of their respective wars. Alvin York fought in World War I and Desmond Doss in World War II. But not only that, they both had movies made about them. I mentioned Gary Cooper before. Gary Cooper played Alvin York in the movie, I believe it was Sergeant York. It was about his exploits during World War I. Just recently, a movie, I believe in the last year or so, has come out about Desmond Doss, who was an Army combat medic during World War II, and he received his Medal of Honor after the Battle of Okinawa, which was among the bloodiest of World War II. The movie is Hacksaw Ridge, that some of you might have seen advertisements about this. But the most interesting thing about these two men, and like I said, they had a considerable amount in common, the most interesting thing is that they were both conscientious objectors. They didn't want to fight. They did not want to fight. They did not want to bear arms against their fellow man. Both of them, it was because of their religious beliefs. Alvin York, he wound up taking up arms that he really didn't have a choice. Both of these men, neither one of them wanted to fight. They were willing to support the war effort. They were as patriotic as anyone else, but they were unwilling to actually go out there and pull the trigger. Now, both of them were basically not given a choice. They were both drafted, and they said, you have to fight. You do not have a choice. I guess they had a choice. They could probably be thrown into the brig, where really, if they had refused, they would have probably been ultimately executed. But they were compelled to fight. Ultimately, Alvin York did wind up taking up arms, and he almost single-handedly, after his small detachment was ambushed and half of their number killed, he being the highest ranking, I think he was a corporal at the time, with only six or seven other men guarding a group of prisoners, came under heavy enemy fire. He basically by himself took out something like 13 German machine gun positions, killing 25 soldiers and capturing single-handedly the rest, over 130 men, basically by himself. And it came down to it. He said, you know what? It was basically us or them. If I didn't get them, they were going to get us. So I did what I had to do. Desmond Doss, not wanting to fight, became a medic and refused to carry any type of weapon with him at all. And he was unusual in that he received his Medal of Honor not because of combat, that he was actually fighting in combat, bearing arms, but because of what he did during combat. You see, he lowered 75 men, wounded men, over a ridge by himself with a rope to save them. He did this under heavy fire. Like I said, both of these men were very very heavily awarded through their war experience. Desmond Doss, he received three different Purple Hearts throughout his time in World War II. It's kind of interesting when you stop and think about it. Despite the fact that these two men were conscientious objectors, they still fought. Even though Desmond Doss didn't actually pick up a weapon, he still fought. He still participated. He still did what was required of him. He didn't want to harm anyone, but they did what they had to do. I've heard of instances during World War II that men would be drafted. They wind up being 4F, not physically qualified to be able to join the army. In one instance, I was listening to a former soldier during World War II. He said in his hometown there was two men that were 4F that wound up committing suicide because they were so upset about not being able to join the war. I guess you roll forward about 30 years or so from World War II, and there seems to be a different mindset in the country. Now, conscientious objectors are burning their draft cards or fleeing to Canada. They're not going to do it. They're not going to fight at all. They refuse to fight. Despite the fact that there's war, despite the fact that their peers are being drafted and sent to Vietnam, they don't want to have anything to do with it. And not only that, many of them would abuse those coming back from that war. What's the difference? What's the difference between these men, Desmond Doss and Alvin York, and later on these draft dodgers? They were both put in the same situation. They didn't want to fight. Maybe these two men, it was because of religious reasons rather than political or social reasons. I don't know. But as soldiers, they were required to do something. These two men did. I want you to consider the Lord's church, us. 2 Timothy chapter 2, starting in verse 1, it says, "You therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things which you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. You therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No one engages in warfare, entangles himself in the affairs of this life, that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier." Here, among other areas, God tells us, Paul through inspiration tells us, that we as Christians are like soldiers. We are soldiers. All throughout the New Testament, we are told that we are engaged in warfare. Not physical warfare, but spiritual warfare. Paul even describes for us our armament. Not only our offensive weapons, but our armor, our shield and helmet. That we are in combat. He tells Timothy, you need to go out and fight the good fight. At the end of Paul's life, he will say, I have fought the good fight. I have done what I needed to as a soldier. He will commend his fellow workers, saying that they are my fellow soldiers in Christ. As Christians, every one of us, not just a few of us, but every one of us ought to be a soldier. There are several things I want to look at it through this passage, 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. In verse 3, it says, "Therefore you must endure hardship as a good soldier." Now that's one of the things that seems pretty common when you think about joining the military, is hardship, right? Especially when it comes to physical endurance. Boot camp is something that is... it's really not pleasant. It doesn't matter what branch of the military that you go to, that it's not pleasant. There are things that you have to endure, whether it is physical or whether it is mental hardship, that you are forced, you're forced outside of your comfort zone. It doesn't matter how good of shape you're in or really how strong mentally you are. There are things that happen in military training that they really test you. And in testing you, they shape you. I think of my experience in boot camp. And of course, this is coming from an 18-year-old kid at the time, which many of our young men and women, when they join, they are 18, 19, 20. They're young. Because they're so young, the type of training that goes on in boot camp is very effective. They are molded into what, in my case, the Navy wanted me to be. I was a sailor. I knew going into boot camp that I wasn't really going to be a sailor. I was a CB. I wasn't going to be stationed on a ship. I was going to be more like a Marine than a regular sailor. But you know what? They had me convinced. I told them, I'm a CB. I'm not going to be on a ship. They said, you're in the Navy. You're a sailor. You're going to be on a ship. Yes, Petty Officer. And they had me that I was exactly what they wanted me to be. By the end of boot camp, when we were on Liberty Weekend, walking around the streets of Chicago in our dress uniforms, we could not help but walking in step with one another. No matter how hard we tried, it was just easier. We were so used to it. We were so conditioned that was natural. You see, we had endured hardship, whether it was the physical strain of PT, that physical training, or one time they crammed 92 of us in a gang shower. It was a shower with 8 shower heads on it. It was kind of a big open room. Not for 92 people, it wasn't. That's how I learned the Navy's... I guess you could say their theme song, Anchors Away. We sat there and sang Anchors Away in that little shower room until, because there was 92 of us in this little cramped room, tile room, through our own sweat, we made it rain from the ceiling. There was hardships that we had to endure, but it molded us, right? That's what, as a soldier... As a Christian soldier, we see these hardships, physical hardships, and how many times, whether you are actually, or whether you've ever been in the military or not, you know in life as a person, you go through hardships, physical hardships. Maybe it's not you're working out, even though if you've ever played a sport in high school, football or whatever else it was, that you worked out and you endured hardships so that you can improve yourself physically, or whether maybe later on in life you broke a bone or you had some type of illness. There's hardships, but you've endured it and you've overcome or you're moving on or at least you're able to deal with it. Of course, the longer you live, that you realize in this life, there's mental hardships, right? Just as a person, as a human being, we all go through this. As a Christian, we know there are going to be hardships that are specific only to Christians. There's going to be persecution. There is going to be temptation. Things that we have to endure. Things that we have to overcome. In James chapter 1, starting in verse 2, it says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." Just like boot camp was a hardship, a trial of sorts that you put these kids into on one end, and when they make it through on the other end, they came out molded into what the Army, the Navy, the Marines, whatever it is, wanted them to be. They become sailors, they become soldiers, Marines. Because of that hardship, they become what they needed to be. Just so as Christians, when we endure those hardships, when we endure trials, when we overcome, what happens? We're slowly being molded into what God desires us to be. Endure those hardships. Become that soldier that Christ desires you to be. See, the thing about the military, and really this is the great thing about the military, is that in all of those hardships, you're not going through them alone. Like I said, there was 91 other guys in that shower with me learning to sing that song. It wasn't me suffering alone. In everything that we did, if one guy messed up, we all got punished as a group. We were in it together. Yeah, we might have got punished because that one guy messed up, but you know what? I was able to lean on my fellow, recruits, as it was in boot camp, and they on me. And throughout my time in the military, that's how it was. I always had somebody there with me. We were enduring it together. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17, it says, "As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend." Enduring these trials together, and then improving on one another, it helps. When you have a little bit of competition, whether it's inside a sports team or at work, you get better, right? You improve one another. When there's a challenge, just so we as Christians, encouraging one another, exhorting one another, and if necessary, rebuking one another. We challenge each other. We sharpen each other. We all have the same goal. We're all trying to get there. The thing is, just like in an army, and the church is an army, we have our fellow soldiers to lean on, to depend on. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 12, the Hebrew writer says, "Beware, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God." But, how to prevent this from happening? "But exhort one another daily as it is called today, right now, and every day, lest you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin." You need to come together and support one another. Be there so others can lean on you, and you can lean on them. Later on, chapter 10, verse 25, says, "Don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together." But he's already given in chapter 3 a reason why. You need to come together. God doesn't need our worship. We need to worship God. We need to gather together. Why? Because we're in a war. You know, you hear around college campuses today, safe zones. "Well, I can't handle the pressures of whatever it is in my life, whether it's prejudices or these hardships of life. So I need a safe zone that I can go to get away from it all." You know what? That's really what the church is for us Christians. We can come together, and this is our safe zone. Not this building, this group of people. And we need that. We need one another. The thing is, Are we willing to give this up? I don't need this, right? I can go off by myself for a day, for 2 days, for 10 days, for a month. I can get away from this safe zone, this safe area, my comrades, and I can still be okay. What happens in life? You ever watch the Discovery Channel or whatnot? You go see it in Africa. Right, the wildebeest that falls behind. You know what happens to that one, the one that's the young, the sickly. What happens any time in this life, no matter what it is, that when one individual gets separated from the herd, it's easy pickings. Right, the predators are out there, and they'll get that one that's separated. We need one another. Endure hardships, but you know what? We can endure them together. Go back and look at verse 4 of 2 Timothy chapter 2. Verse 4 says, "No one engaged in warfare entangles himself in the affairs of this life that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier." That we can please the one who enlisted him. It's interesting. And a lot of times we don't realize, and I don't think I realized it being 18, as I really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. Immediately thought, well, I didn't know what to do with my life at all after high school. I had to go through school, and I didn't have a choice there. But it was easy because I was told, this is what you have to do. Okay, I'll go do it. I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I'll join the military. 5 years in the military, surely after 5 years, I'll know exactly what I wanted to do, right? Well, I got there, and I didn't really realize that I was basically giving up my freedom. I was. I joined the military, and it's kind of interesting. It take an oath. I'm going to take an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, right? That's part of the oath that every, basically every public servant, and definitely in the military, part of the oath that you take. Support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America. Did you know that really, if you join the military there, you might be supporting and defending the Constitution, but you're not really subject to it anymore? You see, you no longer are protected really under the rights of the Constitution. You see, now you're under the UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Now I have a different set of rules. I'm giving up the freedom that I have, and I'm now subjecting myself to really a much more stringent set of rules. I'm giving up freedom because I'm going to follow this. I'm going to dedicate myself to this. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, it says, "But without faith it is impossible to please Him," God. "For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is the rewarder of those that diligently seek Him." That we want to be pleasing to God. Okay, if we want to be pleasing to God, what do we have to do? Well, say, well, we have to have faith in Him, but not just a mere belief, an active living faith. We actually have to be obedient to God. If we want to please Him, as soldiers of Christ, what good is it if we endure hardships but still go to try to please ourselves? Well, I'll endure all of these hardships, but you know what? At the end of the day, I just kind of want to kick back and not really do anything. It's kind of interesting. Every war is different, I guess. The first time when I was over in the desert, I did a lot of security, convoy security. I was usually a crew-served weapon gunner, a machine gunner that sat on the top of the Humvees. This is what I did a lot when I was over there the first time. And so I'd get up in the morning, I'd get dressed and breakfast, whatnot. I'd get all my gear on, you know, put on my full battle rattle, get my Kevlar, my flak jacket, get my weapon, and we'd leave the gate, right? We'd go outside the wire, and it was on. And all day, it was on until we got back in the wire. And then I'd take all that off, I'd take a shower, I'd put on PT clothes, and we'd sit there and we'd watch DVDs, play Xbox. Well, we weren't at war anymore. Now I'm in a basically a concrete bunker where I live, and I'm playing Xbox. You know, I can you know pretend to shoot bad guys on the TV. It was kind of different. You know, it's like I'm sure in World War II they probably weren't doing this a whole lot. That where you kind of go and play war during the day, or go to war during the day and then play war at night, just kind of kick back and relax. Most of the time it doesn't work like that. You know what? It doesn't work like that at all for Christians. It's not like we're at war sometime enduring hardship here and then, well, I'll just go and kick back and relax and not even worry about fighting anymore. See, it's a 24/7 thing. If we want to be pleasing to God, there are no breaks. There are no timeouts. There's no exiting the wire. It's not like, oh, when we say that, well, when we leave here, we're going into the world. Which, yes, that is true, but we're perpetually. It's not that we are religious or holy or whatever you want to say here only. It's all the time. It doesn't matter. We need to be the same people in here as out there, and vice versa. It's no different. We are in total war. And our enemy is on all sides. There is no front line. If we want to be pleasing to the one that enlisted us, we really need to believe what we're fighting for. I was talking to a boy at school. He was a senior, and asked him what he was going to do. And they were talking about, you know, joining the Marines. And so I asked him if he was going to. He said, "No, I don't think. You know, I thought about it, but if I was going to join, I'd probably join the Marines. But I don't think I'm going to." Well, why not? He said, "Well, he didn't like President Trump's policies." He says, "Well, I don't think that I, you know, could, because I don't like his policies. I don't want to fight underneath him. You'd be the commander in chief, and I don't want to do that." And I thought about that, and I said, well, it doesn't really matter if I agree with it or not, but you know what? I at least have to commend this kid for not putting himself in a position where, well, for one, he'd either be violating his conscience, or more importantly, that he would shirk his responsibilities because he didn't like his commander-in-chief and get somebody else hurt. I'd rather him not be in there at all. But do we think about that when we become Christians? That we're not there to please ourselves, and we really need to think about it before we sign up and continue to think about it. Why am I here? Am I here merely to please myself? Well, my goal is to get to heaven. I want to win the victory, win the battle, right? And I know all I have to do is get on the winning side because the battle's already won. Do I remember who enlisted me? Who I'm fighting for? I joined in peacetime, 2001. Joined in July 15th, 2001, I believe it was. So towards the end of boot camp, I graduated mid-September 2001. Battle stations. It's like the crucible of the Marines, battle station in the Navy. It's the very last event. You stay up all night and the next day, and you run through various scenarios. It was actually a lot of fun. Obstacle courses and diving into the pool and making ourselves float with our pants. And you can make yourself float with your pants. It's kind of interesting how you can do that. But it was kind of neat doing all that kind of stuff. Well, we were getting ready for battle stations on the 11th of September in 2001. And so, the Trade Center just got bombed. We go back to our ship, our barracks. Of course, we're in the Navy, it was a ship. Turned on the TV that they had in there for the first time in time to watch the second plane hit the World Trade Center. After we watched it for a while, our RDC, the drill instructor, basically, he turned off the TV. He said, well, guys, y'all are going to war. I joined in peacetime. I joined in peacetime. Surely I'm not going to war. And they said, you don't join the military thinking you're never going to go to war. There are a lot of Christians that sign up thinking they're not going to war. We're in peacetime. It's easy, right? Because in this country, no matter the persecutions that Christians might endure in this country, it's really not that bad. Probably some of the easiest time in the world's history that Christians have ever had. I'm not going to war. We fool ourselves into thinking that. Paul in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 11 says, but you, O man of God, flee these things and pursue righteousness. The things he's talking about is, he's talking about the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil in verse 10 right before. It said, you flee these things, pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, gentleness. Fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold of eternal life. He said, you know what? You are going to fight. You are a Christian. You are going to fight. Or at least you're going to be put into a scenario, a situation, a war where fighting is required. So fight the good fight of faith. And in doing so, lay hold of eternal life. We don't have a choice. If we are Christians, we are soldiers. We must fight. We don't sign up thinking we're not going to. Endure hardship. Be that soldier that Christ desires you to be. Please God, the one who recruited us. But go back to verse 2. It says, in these things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others. Not only are we soldiers, not only do we fight, but we're that, well, I guess you could say that one of the most hated things in the military were recruiters. All right, that kid that I was talking to, he said that he was in the mall. I guess he was in Waco, and he was looked like he was about an 18-year-old kid, 17, 18-year-old kid, which he was, and said a Marine recruiter saw him and followed him throughout the mall until he was able to talk to him. Recruiters, you know, what are recruiters notorious for doing? At least that what everybody thinks. Well, recruiters lie. And you hear everybody say, "Oh, my recruiter lied to me. My recruiter lied to me." Well, maybe you didn't research it enough. Maybe he didn't quite tell you everything. But maybe if they told you everything, you wouldn't want to sign up. Do some recruiters lie? Maybe to get quota. But you know what? The recruiters in this world, the spiritual recruiters, whether it's worldly or false religion, whatever, every one of them lies. That's their job, is to lie. That's what Satan is, the chief recruiter. And he's recruiting for the world. And all of his minions, and all they do is lie. That's it. You know, the thing is, as Christians, we're the only ones that don't. Maybe that's why we have some trouble with recruiting. We don't lie. The world does. False religion does. John chapter 14, verse 6, Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." This is it. This is the truth. And this is what you need to continue to preach. In Matthew chapter 16, when Christ asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Christ said, "On this fact, the fact that I am the Son of God, I will build my church." That's it, right? That's the truth. Christ is the Son of God. And if we want to be in his church, we have to submit ourselves to him. That's not something that people like. I have to submit myself. You see, the church is kind of interesting. It's a self-perpetuating army. At least it ought to be. You see, because I'm not this congregation's recruiter. I'm not. We all are. Every member here is a recruiter. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 5, it says, "But you be watchful." And this is Paul talking to Timothy, the young preacher. "You be watchful in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry." You say, "Well, but preacher, you're the preacher. I'm not a preacher. I'm not. I'm not qualified to be a preacher, to stand behind a pulpit. I'm not able to. I'm not a preacher." And this is Paul. He's talking about the Timothy, the preacher, the evangelist, him going out and doing this. But not him alone. It's not him alone. You see, I learned something at my first command when I was stationed in Okinawa, that I had a first class there. He told me something. It took me a while to really figure it out. He said, "Don't ever speak badly about your command." I didn't really understand this at first. Don't ever speak badly about your command. Outside of it, no matter how bad it might be, don't speak badly about it. But so many times, we say, "Well, I'm not the preacher. I'm not the recruiter." We go out into the world. Maybe it's not necessarily what we say, talking down about the church, but how we live our lives. And somebody that knows us for a while said, "Oh, you're a member of the Church of Christ?" And they don't know. It's a problem. What we say, how we live our lives, that right there, that's going to recruit more people than probably door knocking and a lot of other stuff we do. You know, those cold calls, not always effective. Most of the time they're not. But how we live our lives, what we do in our day-to-day conduct, we will recruit people. We do need to be active. We all need to be evangelistically minded. We are a self-perpetuating army, and we'll find ourselves without any new recruits if we're not careful. I'll leave you with one final passage, and I already alluded to this before, but 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7, this is Paul towards the end of his life. He says, "I fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I've kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day, and not to me only." He says, "Look, I have been that soldier, and I have fought. I have fought to the point where I am wore out. I am physically just, I'm done. I can't continue doing this anymore. But I have that crown of righteousness laid up for me, not for me only, but to all those who have loved his appearing." every other soldier. But you know what? Only those soldiers. Are you what Paul would consider a fellow soldier with him? Or are you a conscientious objector? You read throughout the Bible those that are called by God. Moses, one of the chief among them, he was kind of a conscientious objector. I don't want to do it, but you know what? He went and did it. Things are difficult. Sometimes we might not want to, but we don't have a choice. It's us or them. It better be us. We are in a fight. And I guess we could be a draft dodger. We burn our draft cards, whatnot, but you know what? We're going to pay for it in the end. All those who love is appearing. Only Paul's fellow soldiers. Is that you? Is that me? I want to offer the invitation this morning. If there is anyone that is subject, we want to make this time available. If you've realized that you have not been that good soldier, that you were enlisted at some point in time in the past, but you realize that you haven't been pleasing to the one who enlisted you, that you've worried more about the things of this world than the fight that you're supposed to be fighting, turn from that. Repent. Fight that good fight of faith. If you've never signed up, you never enlisted, I want you to stop and consider where your life is headed. And there's a lot of things you could do, but this is the greatest thing you could do. If you have a need this morning, if there's anything we can do for you, the congregation, whether it's prayers, if there's anything, y'all, we want to encourage you this morning. If you have a need, please come as we stand and sing the song of encouragement.